a heck of a book. We recommend it. We are joined by Peter Moskos, who is a sociologist who became a cop under circumstances that we will touch on, and wrote a book that's been very well received after he had his typos corrected. And it's called Cop in the Hood, and it's all about his experience here in Baltimore. Peter, welcome back to the show.
Hey, it's great to be back on your show.
First, I don't mean to get personal, but I've got to express my sympathy for the death of your father.
Oh, thank you.
You know, I didn't know when we talked last that you were the son of Charles Moskos.
That's right, Mr. Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Yes, and you didn't tell me, so I guess you were...
You didn't ask.
I didn't ask, and you didn't tell me, but your dad died just weeks ago.
Yeah, yeah, so in Chicago for the funeral.
And a professor at Northwestern University, a sociologist of the United States military, and as you alluded to, famous as the author of the military's Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy, which he later repudiated. And
He never repudiated that.
He didn't?
No. He went to the grave of Love and Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Is that right?
Sam Nunn was talking about waffling a bit on that, but we in fact encouraged my dad to be on the right side of history, perhaps, but he was a man of his beliefs, so.
Yeah, I'll say. And a very influential writer about the sociology of the military. And then it led me to understand, well, gee, Peter didn't fall that far from the tree.
Strange coincidence. He liked pointing that out, but he must have inspired me, though. He never pressured me in any of that, but it's an awfully strange coincidence.
But yeah, I mean, he was like, I'm sure, a role model in the sense that you studied sociology at Harvard, right?
Yeah. I saw from both my parents were teachers. My mom was a high school teacher, and mm-hmm. I saw that the academic life, in fact, isn't so bad.
Then later you found out that being a beat cop is a little different.
Well, it's not so bad either, but it certainly is different, and I do wish more academics had some of that real-world experience. If they did, then I've been listening to your show and enjoying it. You know, if more academics were in touch with the real world, perhaps they wouldn't have been advocating failed Section 8 policies.
So. Oh, man, isn't that incredible? It really is, and I really recommend not only your book, Cop in the Hood, to people, but they've got to read that Atlantic Monthly article by Hannah Rosen in which... basically, liberals planning this kind of stuff are forced finally to acknowledge, you know, it hasn't quite worked out the way.
No, I do see a silver lining in it, which is, the poor of Baltimore and other cities are not poor because of Baltimore. I mean, in a way, it's good to spread it out a bit so maybe other people care about the problems and we can figure out what to do with it.
Yeah, maybe, but I'll tell you, that's a high price to pay, you know,
to have your
neighborhood ruined in the name of sociological experimentation.
And the people who advocate the policies, they don't live in the neighborhood.
Of course not. Of course not. That would be, they're not stupid. They're the elite. They rule.
Yeah.
And the rulers aren't going to be inconvenienced by any of their own ideas. That's just a truism. People, we're at a little disadvantage here because you and I are both going to assume that people know what we're talking about with Cop in the Hood, but there will be people listening that didn't hear it earlier, on your earlier appearance. You were a sociologist who got permission to do a book from Thomas Frazier, then police commissioner.
Correct.
And then Frazier was ousted because we had a whole succession of commissioners.
Yeah, I was there for less than 2 years and outlasted three commissioners. So.
Right. I mean, it's incredible. And was it Commissioner Wood who said, well, you can do this book, but only if you become... an officer yourself.
It was actually Acting Commissioner Ron Daniels.
Oh, it was Ron Daniels, okay.
Yeah, who I had the awkward meeting with. I don't think he knew I was even there when he just vetoed everything that Frazier had ever approved, and I think I was just part of that mass veto, because that's the way politics works.
So so Peter Moskos, ladies and gentlemen, became a cop. He went through the police academy and describes that experience in the book quite interestingly.
Negatively, you could say. So the academy, not the policing experience.
Yes, it's sort of a wasted time. And then, for more than a year, you were a beat cop in the Eastern District.
Yeah, I was there from the fall of 1999 to May or so, June of 2001.
And there are a couple of major things that Peter touches on and expounds upon that we will explore on the other side of a break that we're about to do now. Peter Moskos, thanks. Hang on for me, would you please?
Sure.
Folks, you can talk to us by calling 410-467-WBAL, 1-800-767-WBAL. Email address rsmith@wbal.com. Talking right now with Peter Moskos, who is that rarest of things, a a sociologist who was a cop, even after he became a sociologist, a very strange story. But to do his book, Cop in the Hood, he went through police academy and became a beat cop in East Baltimore. And, of course, that's then everyone thinks Peter The Wire, right? Anybody who was a fan of The Wire.
Well, I was a fan of The Wire, and seeing how The Wire is done, I urge everyone to go buy my book. The Wire, this time it's real.
Absolutely. And by the way, I should tell people that they can go to petermoskos.com. They can go to copinthehood.com, right?
Yes, copinthehood.com. There are links to the book, and they can also walk down to Barnes & Noble's in Baltimore and pick up a copy.
Well, they could do that if they're in the mood, or they can get it over the Internet or whatever. But they should get it, and I've read it. It's a fabulous book, but there are things here. It's a mixture, you know, and I noticed this the more I got into it. First, it's a tale of you becoming a cop, okay? And then you do get into the social science aspect of it, and it's sort of interwoven and becomes predominant near the end, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, partly you can say it's a bait and switch. I'm trying to make it fun before I give you your medicine.
Exactly.
But I hope I present it all in a good way. I mean, the book is more, it's not a kiss and tell. It's more than a memoir. It's you know, I want people to learn from it and to think about these issues. But I also wanted to write it in a way that people will actually want to read it. And that's what's rare in academia.
Being clear is rare. Let's talk about the things then specifically, okay? You say the drug war has failed, is failing, and will fail as it's currently constructed, right?
Absolutely.
What are the key elements of that failure?
The key element is that people want to get high, and we're not going to make this a drug-free society, and if that's our goal, we're going to fail. So the question is, given the fact that people are going to get drugs somehow, we can control how they get those drugs. You know, just like alcohol and tobacco, we regulate them, and that's what we've got to do. The violence in communities, the problem in way with Section 8 housing, the culture, it's all around the drug trade. It's the public drug dealers. It's the yo boys hanging out right now in the Eastern District.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem.
And then with Section 8, they spread it out.
Yeah.
And then it becomes very interesting because the criminals become more portable. That's what they found in Memphis, you know, in the nub, of the Atlantic Monthly piece. Section 8 spreads out the criminal activity.
And until we decide to, which, you know, may not happen soon, until we decide to regulate some form of drug trade, I mean, then at least what we can do is try to push it inside. Lots of middle-class people buy and smoke marijuana every day, and they manage to do it without killing each other because they're buying it from friends and families and coworkers like you're supposed to. It's that corner drug dealer. That's the problem.
Yeah, it is interesting. The criminal justice system is almost ironically named. Since there's very little justice involved in it.
And no one who involved in that system really respects it. No one leaves happy after a trial. It just doesn't work. And at some point, yeah, we can improve it, we can tinker, but we got to sort of accept these basic things. And it's not just a matter of getting tough on drugs. I mean, we are. We lock up 2.3 million Americans,
yep.
which should be more of an outrage than it is. We have drug problems in prison. I mean, until we can make our prisons drug-free, we really don't have any chance to make a, you know, supposedly free society drug-free. It's just like banging your head against a wall.
And yet, as you well know, it becomes kind of impervious to real change because it's an empire in itself.
Yeah,
I'm talking about the war on drugs empire. I mean, it's billions of dollars a year that are spent, and largely in jobs, you know, people who have jobs involved in the war on drugs. The entire DEA, much of law enforcement, budgetary measures. This is a huge jobs program, the war on drugs.
I mean, one of the worst examples is in California, the prison guard union actively lobbies against drug reform because to them...
That means a loss of jobs.
It means fewer prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm all for, they can lobby about working conditions and pay, you know, they got a tough job, but they should have no say in sentencing policy. I mean, that's obscene.
Yeah.
I mean, meanwhile, you know, cops particularly need to get paid more, especially in a place like Baltimore where it's a tough and dangerous job. But in the meantime, cops use arrests for overtime pay, which I don't blame the cops for, and I did that too. But ultimately, that's not the way the system should work.
By the way, we should point out to people who don't know about your book that a lot of people were nervous, you know, that you would drop the hammer on them, you know, on the police
culture.
Well,
there's no great hammer to drop.
I know. I mean, that's the point I was going to make. What you do is you you have a lot of respect for the police officers and their other commanders.
Yeah, and it's funny because the only sort of hate mail I've gotten are from old crusty Baltimore cops who, you know, say they refuse to read my book. So it's hard to have a debate about them. But I haven't heard anything bad from anyone who's actually read the book.
Yeah, I'll tell you.
I mean, they know more than me because they've been there for 20 years and I was there, you know, for 20 months.
Yeah, but of course,
hell, let them write their own book.
Exactly, and of course they don't understand those that would argue with you without even knowing what you had to say that you're a trained scholar, and so it was understandable that you could in a shorter period of time get and the story and, you know, interpret it and tell it more than your average person.
Well, I hope so. I hope you're right about that.
Hey, can you hang on for me?
Yeah, of course.
Thanks. We'll take calls, 410-467-WBAL for Peter Moskos. His book, Cop in the Hood, go to copinthehood.com or petermoskos.com, M-O-S-K-O-S. Just get the book, Cop in the Hood. You're going to love it. I did. We're back with Peter Moskos, who's a professor at John Jay College, City University of New York. Did I get that right?
That's correct. John Jay College of Criminal Justice.
Yes, indeed. Again, an oxymoron. But anyway, Cop in the Hood, My Year Policing Baltimore's Eastern District is his book. We have some callers here. Doug wants to talk about the war on drugs. Doug, you're on with Peter Moskos. Go ahead.
Hi, Ron. Mr. Moskos, how you doing?
Good.
I am finally glad to hear people. Let me say I'm very conservative, okay? But I am finally glad people of intelligence have come to the conclusion that we have to eliminate this billion-dollar fiasco called the war on drugs.
Oh, no. It's probably $12 to $14 billion.
Well, right. Mm. Billions.
Billions.
Billions of dollars. Because it's not accomplishing anything. I mean, there's possibly ways it could work, but it would be draconian. And in the environment that we're in, the only way to take the violence out is to make it legal.
Absolutely. And so much of the debate gets hung up on, like medicinal marijuana, which, hell, I'm all for. But that's not the issue. It's not terminally ill cancer patients who are shooting each other. I mean, we have to accept that drugs are bad and then say, okay, now what do we do about it? I am talking about crack and heroin. I don't want people to take it, and I don't think more people would take it if we regulated it. But there might be...
The only example that is pertinent, it was the end of Prohibition, and the rate of drinking did go up a bit, as you might imagine, and you would probably have that, but overall, repealing Prohibition was generally considered to be a social
benefit.
And it's
important to note that drinking did not go down over the course of Prohibition either.
Well, not that much. Certainly
no,
it didn't stop, did it? No. You know, I mean, so they estimate what... Peter, you'd know better than I, but don't they estimate that at least 22 million Americans or so use recreational drugs?
It's a huge number.
And I would think that's an
off the top of my head, but
I would think that's an understatement if you would include prescription drugs.
Well, that's another problem. Another big problem I don't get into in my book. And look, mm-hmm. Hey, prescription drugs are abused, perhaps even more so, but I don't know what the answer is to addiction. You know, that's leave that to the addict and the family and the healthcare mm-hmm. system. But at least on prescription drugs, again, they're not being sold on the corner. People aren't killing each other over it. Right. I should mention in the general category of intelligent people, which I'm happy to be part of, I'm not the only the only cop who says this. There's a whole organization called LEAP, which is Law Enforcement Against Prohibition of cops and judges and prosecutors.
And that's resulted from the sense of futility about what they're sent out to do.
Yeah, and I mean, the good thing about that organization too, it gets away from the long-haired hippie stoner stereotype. These are law enforcement people who have come to see the truth about the war on drugs.
That's interesting. We're going to have more with Peter Moskos as we continue here on the Ron Smith Radio Show. His book, Cop in the Hood, My Year Policing Baltimore's Eastern District. I've read it. I enjoyed it. I think you will too. We're talking with Peter Moskos, former Baltimore police officer. He was a trained sociologist before he became a cop, Harvard trained, and he's now a professor at the John Jay School of Criminal Justice at CUNY, right? City yep. University of New York. And he spent, 20 months patrolling the Eastern District in Baltimore City, right? Wasn't it 20 months?
Six of those in the academy, 20 months altogether.
Yeah. So, and the result is Cop in the Hood, My Year Policing, Baltimore's Eastern District. You know, we mentioned earlier, Peter, that it started out as, and I love the way you grabbed the attention, okay, right at the beginning, telling how you got this opportunity. It was very good. And then the police academy training, and then, you know, then out on the street. And you're right. And then you lead the reader into confronting the underlying major issues, which are, you know, what is going on with the war on drugs, and you know, what's at the heart of the terrible situations in Baltimore's ghetto, and by extension in other big city ghettos. And also, I think one of the most interesting things is what you found out about the culture of the police, who do this endless task that really can't be accomplished.
Yeah, and that's the shame, because, I mean, by and large, police do it very well. I mean, I had a good squad and a great sergeant, and, you know, it was both an honor and fun to work with them. And one of the things I try to get across in the book is that day-to-day life. You know, why cops are unable to clear up drug corners. It's not that the cops don't want to. It's not that the cops don't try. It's just there's actually not a lot the cops can do. You've got, you know, five people sitting on a stoop. Those aren't the kingpins. I mean, you can lock up some kid with a couple vials of crack, but that's not going to solve the problem. It's what I call the dance. You pull up, they walk around the block, you know, you leave, they come back. If they repeat it enough times, you will lock them up, but it's not, it's, you know, just kind of like putting out brush fires, and it's ignoring the real fire behind it all.
There's another thing, a myth that you exploded in that book that leaps to mind. And that is, you know, a lot of people say, well, you know, these kids that, you know, they're working the corners, they make so much money that, you know, no legitimate enterprise could compete with it, even if they could get a job, so on and so forth. You make the point that at the lower levels, they don't make much at all.
No, usually it's sub-minimum wage for the low levels. They're not getting rich off it, but some, you know, someone's getting rich somewhere down the line off drugs, but it's probably not that idiot on the corner. But, you know, some money is better than no money, and it's not like a lot of these guys are employable anyway. I mean, who wants to hire them? They got their school dropouts, you know, they got bad attitudes, and then social skills that, you know, shall we say, are not mainstream. You know, it's hard to say what the answer is, but it's at least we should stop doing what, you know, continuing the problem.
Well, we have a caller who has a question for you. His name is Jeff. Jeff, you're on. Go ahead.
Hi, how's it going?
Good.
Good.
My question was, I'm getting a little feedback here, but my question was, did you have any preconceived notions going into this book, like a plan for the book before you got into the police academy, or did it change as you went through it?
No, I had no real, I just sort of went with the flow because I didn't know where I was going to be assigned. I didn't know what I was going to find. You know, there's some fancy academic jargon for that, but it's basically, you know, just taking it as it comes. No, I don't even think I knew when I left the police force what the book was going to be about. I mean, it takes, you know, it's been a many-year process to put it all together and get it in a form that's interesting to read. No, I mean, I went in, you know, mildly pro-police. I left even more pro-police. I'll say that. Preconceived notions, I think, you know, a lot of people watch too much cop shows and movies, and they assume that there's a lot more corruption and brutality in the police department. And I was very happy to find out that that's not the case. I mean, as I love pointing out, that I think integrity is higher in the Baltimore Police Department than it, you know, is in the average college. I mean, cops by and large are they're clean living, and then they don't jeopardize their pension.
Don't say that in your classrooms. Okay?
I didn't tell my college my name.
That's my advice. Don't let that be... you're already viewed with suspicion by your fellow.
A lot of my students
scholars
want to become police officers, so I try to tell it like it is.
Oh, that's good. That's good. But what about your colleagues? And thank you, Jeff, for your call. What about your colleagues, though? They view you with a little suspicion, don't they? Because you were in the dark side for a time.
My school's... I'm not the only former police officer there, so it's pretty sympathetic to what I do. So it's a good school.
Well, Peter, thanks so much for coming on with us again. We're happy to help you promote your book, Cop in the Hood, My Year Policing Baltimore's Eastern District. Anybody with an interest in Baltimore City policing, the war on drugs, or just in search of a good tale will benefit and will like this book. So thanks so much, and good luck to you.
Thanks for having me.
All right, sir. Goodbye. That's Peter Moskos, the book Cop in the Hood, My Year Policing Baltimore's Eastern District. It comes with a high recommendation from yours truly.